from the vault. High atop the pastoral center of the Diocese of Camden, you're listening to Talking Catholic.
Hello, everybody. Once again, I'm Pete Sanchez, and you are listening to Talking Catholic, the official podcast of the Catholic community of South Jersey. And this is, I'm here with Mike Walsh. Mike, how are you?
Very good. We're outside of the vault again. Our first time outside, in a couple of weeks at least.
Yeah, I think we were. It's nice to get out. It's a rainy day here in New Jersey.
And we're in the heart of Gloucester County, my home county. I'm actually looking out a window right now, the beautiful green foliage outside of a deck. It's literally making me think of home right now, which is all of 7 miles away from me. So I'm very happy.
I'm glad. You know, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to bring South Jersey to you guys, bring the beauty, bring what's going on, bring the stories of individuals and what's happening in our diocese. So, Mike, let's go around the diocese to see what is happening. A little news and notes here. So, coming up this Saturday, May 19th, is the Eucharist and Evangelization with our friends of the podcast, the Franciscan Sisters of the Renewal. This is going to be actually where we're recording at Holy Family Parish, the Aquin Center, 226 Herbville Road in Sewell. That starts at 6 p.m., so come on out. Hear this. It's going to be with Sister Anne, Sister Joseph, and Sister Chiara, who live according to the idols of St. Francis. It involves work with the poor and homeless and evangelization. So they're going to come and talk about Eucharist and evangelization. So come on out, 6 p.m. this Saturday, May 19th at Holy Family in Sewell. And next week, Mike, May 23rd, 7 p.m., you know St. Padre Pio.
I do.
Right? Mm-hmm. Wonderful. My favorite.
I think we've both been blessed by relics of St. Padre Pio.
Yes.
Matter of fact. Yes.
The heart of Padre Pio. Mm-hmm. And that was at St. Padre Pio Parish in Vineland. But this is going to be there's going to be a birthday celebration May 23rd, 7 p.m. at his shrine on Route 40, Harding Highway in Landisville, with music, candlelight procession, and a live rosary. Many miracles and healings have occurred here. So as Padre Pio would say, pray, hope, and don't worry. And come on out. All are welcome. Refreshments will be served. This is 7 p.m. May 23rd at the St. Padre Pio Shrine on Route 40, Harding Highway in Landisville.
And for any of you in the South Jersey area who have ever driven down 42 as you're going through the greater Buna area, or Minatola, that's where my father used to teach, so I'm very familiar with the area. And it's this beautiful little shrine, it used to be a little shrine, it's now a substantial shrine right on the side of the road. So everybody sees it as they're going by, and it's really very sweet and nice, and I've stopped off at it a couple of times to say a few prayers, and it's a great opportunity and one of those interesting parts of South Jersey that you know, you don't get to see on a regular basis. But if you're looking forward to it, and I am, I highly recommend you take the drive. It's beautiful, it's scenic, and there's a ton of great restaurants in any direction. So
I think you convinced me. I'm gonna try to make it myself. I've never been to the shrine. So stop in, say hello. And then 3 days later, May 26th, we have the Mass in honor of Our Lady of Queen of Heaven. That is at St. Barbara's Chapel, 2334 East Oak Road in Vineland, in remembrance of Queen of Heaven's 101-year Fatima anniversary. It's going to be at the St. Barbara's Chapel. Father Ariel Hernandez, pastor of Our Lady of the Blessed Sacrament Parish in Newfield, will be the primary celebrant. So come on out. This starts Saturday, May 26th at 4 p.m. And also at the chapel, the Divine Mercy Chapel will be prayed every Tuesday evening in June at 6:30 at the chapel. Everyone is welcome, especially May 26th, 4 p.m. St. Barbara's Chapel for the Mass in honor of Our Lady Queen of Heaven. Call 856-692-6918 for more information. And, Mike, it's time that year once again for the Feast of the Corpus Christi Procession. I'm sure there'll be many around the diocese, but there is one confirmed at St. Nicholas Church on June 3rd at 9:45 a.m. This is going to be Our Lady of Perpetual Help Parish is holding this in Egg Harbor Township. All are welcome to walk around the church grounds to, four altars adorned in... with the Blessed Sacrament.
And the beautiful church ground. That's another one of the lovely parishes. Yeah. As a matter of fact, our esteemed guest was there as well. But it's a great place to really kind of focus and meditate and become inspired by God.
I know I went to one in I think a few years ago, not this one in Our Lady Perpetual Help, unfortunately, but another parish, and that was beautiful. Being able to walk around and first communicants, you know, you're invited. You can wear your white dresses or suits and come on out. Ceremony will take place between the conclusion of the 8:45 a.m. Mass on Sunday and the beginning of the 10:30 a.m. Spanish Mass. So right in between at 9:45, June 3rd at St. Nicholas Church, 525 St. Louis Avenue in Egg Harbor Township. If there are any engaged couples listening right now, I know you're married, Mike, so this is not,
I am. That's true.
Not for how many years now?
I think it's going to be 19 in September.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Well, for any of those who like Mike.
Wait a second. 19 in August. Hold on. Sorry about that. I will get vilified for that. 19th in August. August 14th. I know when I was married. Just want to point that out for anyone who might be listening.
You were engaged in September, right? Is that how it was? You were engaged in September?
No. We got engaged in November. We had a very short engagement because I was a teacher at the time, and we were convinced that we had to get married in the summertime. But by the time the next school year rolled around, I was no longer a teacher, so we could have pushed it back. But we already had everything taken care of at that point, so we kept it in August.
I almost would have had to come look for a new co-host.
Well, if I forgot my anniversary date, yeah. Well, yeah, because I would have been murdered. Yes, of course. Especially since it's my grandfather's birthday as well. It's his 93rd birthday. We were married on his 93rd. This year it'll be his 93rd birthday.
Oh, God bless you, Mike. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer. So the engaged encounter, this is going to be a weekend away, you know, for engaged couples with other engaged couples. There'll be plenty of time to by yourselves as well as to dialogue honestly and intensively.
I did the engaged encounter 19 years ago. Yeah.
So
yeah.
What can you say about it? What can you tell?
It's you know, if there's one thing that married or people who are engaged I think fail to do is properly prepare themselves for the rigors of marriage. And a weekend away where you can really focus on what a marriage really is and the trials and tribulations that will accompany it and how God's grace can be a part of it. And not only a part of it, but a primary part of it. I think these kinds of events, if you're of that mindset and they're, you know, everyone reacts to things differently. But if a weekend away where you can really focus on your impending marriage, I think a lot of people would benefit from something like that. Hmm. It's not something you want to, all too often, and I've talked to some of the folks in the tribunal who handled the annulments, all too often people kind of walk into their marriages with eyes closed, and you need your eyes wide open because it's a lifetime commitment. You have to be prepared for that. And I think anything you can do during this engagement time to make certain that, you know, the person you're marrying is someone who does truly share your values and your beliefs and also wants to make sure that Christ is a part of your marriage. I think you can only benefit from something like that.
Oh, beautiful, Mike.
Well, sure.
You also made me think of the creed that with eyes wide open, that song with arms wide open. So thank you.
Wow.
You got Scott Stapp in my head.
There's a lot of 90s throwbacks that have been shot my way in the last 2 days. All right.
So this is going to be coming with eyes, arms, hearts wide open, Friday, June 8th to Sunday, June 10th. It's all day at St. John Paul II Retreat House in Vineland. Call 856-583-2904. There is a registration fee. It includes lodging, meals, and program resources for the weekend for two people. For more info, contact the Office of Faith and Family Life Formation at 856-583-2903 or 856-583-2904. So, and as well, if you cannot make the June 8th to June 10th one, there is another engaged encounter, August 10th through the 12th. So you have no reason not to do this, engaged people. And then going from engaged to married, Mike, in a few years, you'll probably be here at the Diocesan Wedding Anniversary Celebration Mass.
Probably.
You will.
Do you know
will.
Something that I don't know? I hope I'll be there.
You will. I hope,
I expect to be there.
Yes. Right. Yes. And let mea culpa. It's going to be a couple celebrating their 25th, 50th, 60th, 70th, or longer wedding anniversary. And come on out, Bishop, and celebrate with Bishop Dennis Sullivan at near you, Mike, Mary Mother Mercy Parish, mm-hmm. Our Lady Lord's Church, 500 Green Tree Road in Glassboro. So,
also great restaurants in the area if you're looking forward to it. And very close to where we are right now.
Wonderful. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, then call Mike Walsh at,
that's
you
right.
know, for, you know, get some good restaurant recommendations.
That's right.
There'll be a light reception following in the parish hall, so you will not fill yourself up if you're going to a nice restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Registration forms are available to now at all parishes' offices. And for more information, contact your parish office or email marylou.hughes@camdendiocese.org. So that should be a fun time. Now, I think, Mike, and also now we got some exciting things coming up in the fall. We got three awesome events that are happening. We have the,
hold on. June. First of all, we skipped one rather important one that's coming up in, less than a month. And that is the ordinations of our two newest priests are coming up. And that's the Saturday before Father's Day. I think that's the 16th.
June 16th.
Yeah, 16th.
Thank
so
you for
hopefully everyone can come out to the cathedral for that. We have mm-hmm. two great deacons who will be taking their vows to the priesthood that day. And two of the nicest young men that I've had the benefit of meeting over the last several years. All of our seminarians are wonderful people, but these two are particularly aces. So I would hope that Catholics in the area would come out and visit. And it's a great, you get the benefit of all the pomp. If you're into the pomp and circumstance like I am, it's beautiful to see the procession of all the priests of the diocese and the deacons of the diocese coming forward. And then the actual ordination itself with Bishop Sullivan, and he always has a wonderful homily to go with it. So it's really something to behold. So I hope you'll come to that. However, we have we are at the 12-minute mark, so I think we can hold off on the fall announcements for a while, but definitely want to invite people to the ordinations on the 16th.
Yes, come on out.
So Pete, where are we today? We've hinted at it a couple times.
Well, we are in Holy Family Parish in Sewell, New Jersey. I've been here many times. Beautiful place. We are here with the pastor, Father John Picnic. How are you, Father?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for being here. We're doing a special episode. We haven't had the... for about half the diocese is aware of something called Catholic Strong. And the other half of the diocese is going to in the fall, is going to be focusing on Catholic Strong as well. And what Catholic Strong is a diocesan-wide financial development campaign. It's unlike many dioceses, these campaigns are run about once every 10 years. In our diocese, one hasn't been run for nearly 30 years. So we are very much overdue. And the goal of this one is to raise about $50 million. However, what makes it different than most diocesan-wide campaigns is the diocese is not getting the lion's share of the fundraising. The fundraising is 70% of it will stay with the individual parishes. So this is very much a parish campaign more so than a diocesan campaign. The diocesan elements will go towards religious education, new services that we haven't ever had the opportunity to produce before, like specifically related to the opioid crisis and autism, and then some evangelization opportunities that we've never been able to take advantage of as well from a diocesan standpoint. But everything else goes straight back to the parishes. And in Holy Family's case, what are the elements of your campaign?
Well, we are also looking at vision, right? We don't want it just to be about like a roof or a wall. So as Bishop had pointed out when the campaign began, he wanted it to be building up the church. So we're also focusing on evangelization, strengthening some of our ministries, because going with that, we have about 4,000 families registered. And I'm sure the other parishes are around the same percentage, because out of those 4,000 families, on a particular weekend, we're getting about 1,500 or 1,600 of those families at Mass. So the evangelization question for us in our Catholic Strong campaign is, what do we put aside to help foster ministries, programs, whatever you want to call them, to reach out to the other 2,600? This doesn't mean we're going to ignore the 1,400 or 1,500 we hear. We have beautiful things planned for them as well. But we do need to put something together to bring back, you know, the folks that don't come as much or who barely come, but they're on our books. We need to be innovative. We need to think out of the box. And I think we need to be a little bold. Like Jesus sent them out in pairs. I know there are other religions that do this. You know, the Mormons, the apostles they send out, Jehovah's Witnesses. And they're very aggressive in that. And they don't have no shame.
Yeah.
You know, they'll ring your bell and bring you the gospel as best as they know it. I want to see if I can set up some fervor amongst our own apostles who are here now to maybe do something like that. But you know, everything needs money, right? You know, when you set up these kinds of ministries and programs and the rest. So yes, we're going to be doing the typical things, cleaning up the property, patching things up, building something new, but we're also very much aware of building up people.
Right. And that was something that, you know, one of the underlying themes throughout the entire Catholic Strong campaign has been this sense of missionary discipleship, something that, you know, Pope Francis has talked about since he took on his pontificate repeatedly, and something that Bishop Sullivan has really taken to heart, particularly in the last year coming out of the convocation for Catholic leaders that took place in Orlando last year. That may have been the most important thing that, as an attendee, that I took out as well, that we really have to break down the walls of our parishes, that we have to, that as Catholics, we have to understand that A, you know, our Catholic faith is not just Sunday at church, that we have to go out. We have to do more. We have to bring more people in. We have to go to the peripheries. We have to find the people who've gone away from the church. We have to go after the people who don't know that they need the church. And for a lot of us Catholics, that is atypical of our culture, particularly here in the Northeast. That's not something we typically do. So inspiring those people to do that is very much part of Catholic Strong.
And that's the vision of Vatican II. I don't think we've fully... it hasn't fully come to fruition. If I preach on a Sunday and I tell the people in the pews that they're apostles and they've been called and sent, right? This is a vision from Vatican II. It's a vision that came out of St. Vincent Pallotti in Rome in the 1830s and 40s. There's other people other saints that took that call up. It's a going back to the early church fathers. They understood that everybody's got to go out and preach. But when I tell them they're apostles, they look at me funny. They're like, no, we thought Peter was an apostle and we're just disciples. No, you're sent out on mission as well. So you're coming here to receive the good word of the mission. Now it's got to go out the doors. That's right. Can't just be something that you hear. It has to be something that you live. And it's got to be a joy within you, right? People have to see it radiating. Because you could sit with someone and try to convince them to come back to church, and you can quote Aquinas and Augustine, that typically doesn't work, right? They're going to come back because they see something in us, a fervor in us. So, I mean, if we're just coming and parking, don't get me wrong, I'm glad people are coming to church, right? But it's not enough, right? If they're just coming to park, fill up the tank on a Sunday, and not come back till the following Sunday, they're not living out their full apostleship.
Yeah.
So the evangelization part is we have to evangelize the people in the pews first, right? And then secondly, once they're convinced that they're apostles, they can then bring that out. I know I'm going off the track here a little bit, but that was also our goal, even in the midst of the Capitol campaign, is that we're continuing to build up apostles within the church.
Yeah.
And I think that's something you talked about that. It's interesting. I read something where, and I agree with this person, this writer, it's something we haven't heard enough about people. You know, we don't let people know that they are apostles or disciples. You know, I'm trying to think of my own life. Probably a handful of people have said, hey, you know, you should do this. Like, you should go out and you should, you know, you are an apostle. And it just, it's good. It's, you know, you're talking about, you know, hearing and, but also, you know, the youth of the church. And, you know, we have to let them know their mission, their greater mission.
You know,
missionary disciples.
That was one of my favorite parts before I came to work for the church, back when I was out in the corporate world. I loved being, well, I didn't love being this, but I always appreciated my role as a token Catholic, where I could go and so a new pope is named or a new encyclical comes out, and I could go and talk to people about it and say, and clear up any misgivings or misunderstandings that were there. They would always come to me like, you're Catholic. What is the deal with this? And anytime that happened, I was thrilled about it. But I also love being able to tell them. I remember when I was made a Knight of Columbus for the first time and I got my shining shield as a first-year Catholic, as a first-year knight, and I put it up on my social media accounts, and all these agnostics were coming to me and asking me about it, and all these lapsed Catholics, and they were reminded of their youth, and some of them I was able to encourage back to church again, and some of them stuck, some of them didn't, but you kept trying, you kept doing it. Just being on our little cocoons of the church is not what's going to make our church grow and be even more vital to our communities. We really have to show and live our faith. And I think some people are nervous about that. You know, Pete, you're not one of them. You show your faith all the time.
I don't know. It's I try to. You know, I think it's something that working for the church has made me more comfortable doing, because I see the joy from other people. You know, and I'm so happy talking with you, Father, and I've also been working on some stuff for the newspaper and seeing the fervor, like you were saying, with the how long ago did you when did you first hear about this?
The Catholic Strong,
it was over a year ago. It's funny because I had to give a talk back in February to all the pilot and phase one people, the pastors, as well as the committees. Oh, I was nervous as heck. I remember Father Hughes asked me to give the talk. I was happy he asked me, but at the same time, my heart sank, because now I'd have to go in front of all my peers and, you know, give the rah-rah speech. Yeah. But, you know, I got through it. I got through it okay. So, yeah, they had asked me to do that, but when I first got the letter from Bishop, it was over a year ago, and it said that we're planning this capital campaign, I was like, oh, my goodness. You know, another thing, you know, and now I got to go ask people for money. Just this, just the very thing I went to theology school for, right? You know, I was so naive back then. I thought I was only going to be doing like two or three things, preaching the gospel, mm-hmm. bringing the sacraments to people, and visiting the sick. I quickly learned that that's just only one part of it, mm-hmm. right? There's also the administrative part. There's also the social aspects and all the rest. So when I got the letter, I'm thinking at first, you know, and this was part of my talk back in February, I said to myself, this is not a good time. And maybe I was being selfish, but, you know, I said to myself, it's not a good time because, you know, do people have the kind of money? You know, they're already giving to House of Charity. They're already giving to the local fund, the ordinary fund. But then as I prayed about it, I realized, you know what? There's never a good time, right, to have a capital campaign. Somebody's always going to come up with some reason not to have it. And it's sacrificial in nature. You know, these capital campaigns have been going on in the church long before any of us have been here. I was at a meeting yesterday with Monsignor Marucci, and he brought up the biblical aspects of capital campaigns. They've been going on since Moses, mm-hmm. right? Gathering resources for the community, King David, taking up collections which were beyond the ordinary collections to build up Israel. And then again, you can hear this from St. Paul, taking up collections for the church in Jerusalem. So these kind of campaigns and endeavors have been going on for a long time. They're sacrificial in nature. I'd come to realize that. And once I did, I also realized I am no expert in this. The only thing I knew what to do was for a House of Charity.
Yeah.
Right? I'd been doing that for a number of years, so I was used to the routine. There are some similar aspects of House of Charity, not in terms of the goals, but methodology. Mm-hmm. Some of it's the same, but a capital campaign is much more involved. So I've been blessed at the parish. I have Deacon Jerry Jablonowski, mm-hmm. Who's the director of Vitality. And Jerry comes with unbelievable wealth of knowledge from his time being a CEO in hospitals up in Trenton. And he's done fundraisers himself. So I tapped into people that I knew had experience in this. We also have a couple of parishioners in the parish who actually work for fundraising organizations who I tapped into and sat down and had dinner with for them to give me an idea or methods. And they all said the same thing in the end. Father, it's about vision. And this is also what Monsignor Marucci spoke about yesterday in our meeting. You have to be enthusiastic, and it has to be vision-oriented. And I think that's what Bishop had done right from the beginning. Right from the beginning.
Yeah, I would agree. The pilot phase started in November, and phase one started in January. There's a phase 1.5 that starts in May for the Shore area, and then phase two starts in the fall, and that'll be the last half of the parishes. In each case, you know, there is a group that's supporting this effort called Changing Our World, who's come in with a lot of expertise, and they've been doing these things across the country for decades, and they really know what they're doing. And a lot of it is getting people on board that this is a special sacrifice. This is something this is over and above what we do. And it's, you know, no one's expecting the money that day. It's you know, you can pledge your money for 3 to 5 years or whatever works for you. And certainly taking everything into account in your own life as to what your pledge is. But understanding that there's an importance to this and that there really is a plan for how to utilize it. Now, each of the parishes is determining on their own what to do with that 70%. Some parishes are using it for some infrastructure improvements. Some of it's they're hiring professionals to take up pastoral roles at the in their parish. Some of it is for brand new services. Some of it's for ministries that have been lacking for the last couple of years. So each parish will find its own way of how to utilize the money, but all of it's for the same purpose, which is to grow the Catholic Church in that community, grow our own faith, spread the word, bring people in, and you know, help make our Catholic faith as vital as it's ever been. Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead, Pete.
No, I was just getting on that point. I think when you let people know, you were talking about vision, Father, we're part of a bigger story here. So if we can let people know that, like, the biblical history, the history of our fathers and grandfathers who sacrificed for the church, mm-hmm. if we let the community know, hey, you can contribute to this and contribute to the future story of the church, like you were saying, Mike, you were saying, Father, I think that too, you know, remembering we're part of something greater here. Mm-hmm. And what we can do, like with youth ministry, the heroin epidemic, or a lot of parishes are starting addiction healing services program. Even the diocese is going to do something to that effect. Senior ministry. So this is just a very exciting chapter for South Jersey.
So I'm curious, how did your parish respond when, but let me rephrase that. How did your parish leaders respond when you brought the news of the convocation or campaign to them?
Well, you know, I think in the beginning they had mixed feelings. On the one hand, they realized infrastructure needs to be repaired, sometimes even rebuilt. And the way I explained that to them, think of your own home, right? You buy a brand new home 20 years ago. That home is not going to remain exactly the same 20 years later, right? You've probably fixed some pipes. You've probably fixed some windows, possibly the roof, other things in your own home that you have to keep up. It could be your refrigerator went bad, the AC unit, now you're upgrading to central air. Now I want you to think of that on a much bigger scale, because we have about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 buildings, and some of them rather large. So take your house and multiply it by 30, right? And those are some of the expenses we have to deal with in terms of the upkeep. When I explained that to them, but also the vision aspect of it and beautifying the place, they started to slowly buy into it. Mm-hmm. Right? They could see the reality of things that are needed. I mean, even some people who were vehemently against it even came around to some extent and said, yes, Father, I understand, you know, the wall is not always going to remain intact. And so even those folks who originally said no, some of them still gave even a little bit in terms of a monetary gift. But the committee's bought in. They're a great committee. It's a committee of 12. I did that on purpose.
very appropriate.
Very biblical number.
Yeah.
And they've been wonderful. They're in here making phone calls, doing data entry, doing follow-up calls, sending out invitations, reporting to me. Some of them have even did solicitations on their own. Some of them don't feel as comfortable with that. They would rather have me do that. But we've done all kinds of things. One-on-ones over at my house. We invite a couple over and we make them dinner. We've also had dinners in the hall. And some people just want to sit in the office here and have a cup of coffee. I basically leave it up to them because you don't want to force somebody to come to the house if they don't really want to.
Yeah.
But the great majority of them, they want to come see the rectory. And, you know, because it's like a magical place, right? And then they come in and they realize, oh, they live just like us. You know, it's nothing really different. You know, so it's nice to see their faces as they come through the tour.
It is funny you say that because I, working for the church, I have been in a lot of rectories, but I've never been in here. So I was kind of, when I came in, thank you so much for the coffee. I saw the little kitchen. I was like, okay.
Well, here's the thing. This used to be the rectory. I think before Father Hughes arrived, I think it might have been Monsignor McIntyre who was here before him.
Oh, he's writing for the paper.
This,
okay.
Back in his day, this was where they lived. And I think the room we're sitting in was a gathering room. So they bought the house right next door. Mm-hmm. So when you pull out of here and make a right, we're right there. Once they did that, whoever the pastor was before Father Hughes, he made this his office. Mm. I guess I can't blame the guy.
It is a beautiful office.
Yeah. So that's how that worked out. So yeah, you're right in one sense. This was the house, and the offices were on the other side.
God, well, it feels very homey.
Oh, good.
I'm very welcome here. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Absolutely. Absolutely. We take care of you guys.
No, I appreciate that. That's nice. And once again, great location. The but you also have a lively parish as well. We mentioned one of the events that's going on. You're having the sisters from Atlantic City in.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that.
Yeah. Will this be their first visit here?
This is their first visit here. What we did this year, for a whole year before this one, we had started planning our evangelization plan. Mm-hmm. And the first year was to evangelize the folks in the pews. So we set up a lot of Saturdays where we would have testimonials, faith sharing. I brought in guest speakers. Father Nick Dudo was here for the opening talk. The sisters are coming this week. We had movie nights, presentations, and then the capital campaign happened at the same time. So not that the evangelization suffered, but you know, all our energies kind of moved towards the capital campaign because we wanted to do a good job for the diocese and the parish. But the evangelization is continuing hand in hand, and that's going to continue next year as well. And I think next year we're going to start moving into taking that out into the street.
Yeah.
But the capital campaign, one thing in terms of vision, we want to build a senior lounge. Because we do have a lot of elderly folks. We already have a youth lounge. We did that 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. So they have a cool place to hang out. There's you know, a couple couches, a big screen TV. Somebody donated a refrigerator, some furniture. We redid the floor. We want to do something like that for our seniors. Mm. They've been asking for it.
No, that's a great idea.
You know, and they're very involved in the church. So to give them a little place where they can gather each day would be wonderful. And also a great selling point for the capital campaign as well.
Well, that's just it. This is a very welcoming parish. You know, you talked about how some of your evangelization was sort of minimized with the Catholic Strong campaign, except from an outsider, it doesn't look like that at all. Because on top of everything, you have the sisters in now, you had Father Nick Dudo, and you had Gus Lloyd from Catholic XM Radio's Catholic Channel, and that was a three-day event, right?
Yeah, three-day event. Gus came out the whole weekend, but he had started Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night. Best turnout we've ever had since I've been a pastor here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I have to give Father Hughes a lot of credit. I always tease him. I became the succeeding coach of Duke after Coach K left. So Father Hughes is like Coach K, right? He really built this place up. We have about 55 active ministries. So this place is moving. Yeah. There's constantly, the rooms are being taken up all day long with ministerial meetings. We're running out of space, which is actually a good thing. And a lot of that's credited to Father Hughes and what he built here. Mm-hmm. So I got handed a gem.
Well, that does make it easier. That is true.
It did make it easier.
Well, I can see you're a Yankee fan, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I guess it could be the Joe Girardi after the Joe Torre.
Yeah.
But Girardi played pretty well.
Yeah, he did. So... the parish is doing well, and there's a lot of exciting things happening, and so I'm very happy for what I've been given, mm-hmm. right? And that the diocese trusted me to step into some big shoes there.
You know, as you've talked to your colleagues around the diocese, the other pastors around the diocese, particularly this meeting you were at just the other day, are you finding receptive ears as you're mentioning the successes you've had and the manners in which you've accomplished it?
Yeah, I think most of the guys are on board. I can't answer for everybody, you know, but most of the guys that I've talked to are enthusiastic. They're looking to do a good job. They want to be able to raise the funds and make the goal. And I think that's exactly what they're doing.
Okay.
I'm sure they had some trepidations at the beginning, like I did. But you quickly get over those as you begin to talk to other people and get advice. And changing our world has been wonderful. Right now we have Adelisa and Bridget with us. Sean has come in a few times to give us some good pointers. So we're on a good path.
No, you really are. And, you know, one of the things that you mentioned earlier on was the benefit of having people in the parish who have some experience with fundraising. And you don't know that until something like this comes up and you realize, oh, there's more talent in the parish than I may have realized right away.
Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of talent in the parish. You'd be surprised. Mm-hmm. So when I started inquiring, you know, I didn't know I had two parishioners that were part of, you know, campaign people, you know, that went out and raised funds, and they were a tremendous help, mm-hmm. Obviously, along with Deacon Jerry. I had an idea that Deacon Jerry had done stuff like that. I wasn't exactly sure what it entailed, but once we sat down and began to discuss it, I realized he had a wealth of knowledge,
yeah.
which was a huge in the beginning.
And that must be great for them, because not only, you know, they're here in the church, and maybe they're in the pew, and, you know, thinking of other places too, they're in the pew and they, you know, it's kind of their work is separate from here. But then say the pastor says, hey, I know you do this. Can you help? That gives them the opportunity to maybe get out of themselves a little more and realize that what they're doing is, I don't know, I'm just, it could provide them with more purpose. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when I called in the 12 folks that were going to be on the committee, they were honored that I asked, and they got excited. And they were willing to do all this hard work, which said to me, wow, these people really love their parish. Because it's not easy to do something like that, where you're calling people, ask them to come out to dinners, and they know they're coming out to dinners to be asked for something.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No dinners for free,
that's right.
As they say. And they not more than willing, mm-hmm. more than willing, and very great. I'm very grateful to them, and they're still doing it. I mean, we're going to keep running. We started back in November. We're not going to finish until October, mm-hmm. right? We needed a little bit of time. We had a little bit of a hiccup somewhere in between because one of the changing of our world. old person's had moved on, so we had to get a new director, and that's running smoothly. But you know, anytime you change leadership, you know, things have to get reorganized and, you know, a new focus. So we're in a great place right now.
And no, that's really good.
So I could see the in-pew solicitation happening sometime probably in early October.
Mm-hmm. That's great. The you know, part of the podcast is we usually talk about something that's going on, but we also like to talk with our guests about their sort of their backgrounds. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say you're not from around here.
What would ever give you that idea? It was it after I gave you the coffee?
Yeah, that was it.
And the water.
Just because you pronounce it correctly, that's all right.
Oh, thank you.
I'll give you credit. I know I say water wrong. That's all right. I'm a Philly guy.
You already said
that.
He was a Yankee
now,
fan.
Are you both
so.
Philly guys or South,
South Jersey guys?
Jersey.
Yeah. South Jersey guys. Yeah. Yeah, I was born in Astoria, Queens.
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is right near Shea Stadium. It's only a little bit of ways away. Shea is in Flushing. I don't even think it's called Shea anymore. I think it's called City Field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But believe it or not, I'm not a Mets fan. I'll tell you how that happened. In the mid to late 70s, the Mets were horrible. My dad and my older brother were big Met fans, so I just got tired of it. I remember going to Met games. There's only 5,000 people in the stadium. So I'm watching the Yankees on television, and I see a full-blown stadium and the excitement. So I beg my dad to take me there, and he does. He didn't want to go. So we go, and we're in a packed house. And we're sitting up pretty close, and I see the pinstripe uniforms and all the rah-rah. I jumped allegiances.
Oh.
But you're allowed to jump allegiances before you're 10 years old.
I've always said the same thing.
All right, so you, after 10, that's it, you're stuck.
I did not.
That's a Father, that's a Father John rule.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, once you're 10, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So I jumped ship and went, and I've been a Yankees fan ever since. But from Astoria, Queens... when I was about 10 years old, we moved to North Jersey, a little town called Fairview, which is actually mentioned in a Bruce Springsteen song, Darkness on the Edge of Town. Mm-hmm. And that's about 3 miles south of the George Washington Bridge, if you're trying to get a mind's eye view of where it would be. Some surrounding towns would be North Bergen, Cliffside Park, Edgewater, Richfield Park. Mm-hmm. The original pilot of MTV.
Really?
Five towns, yes. It was Fairview, Cliffside Park, Fort Lee, Powell Park, and Richfield.
Yeah, I didn't know
that. MTV broadcast the pilot for about, I would say it was about a month.
Yeah.
And then they started going regional and then finally national.
Wow.
Yes.
That is a little history.
Now, yeah, a little little trivia history there. Yeah.
Now, I have to say, you know, talking about the Yankees, I grew up in South Jersey, but I have family up in North Jersey near South Orange, near the seminary. So they're all Yankee fans, but my father grew up around there, so he's kind of a Yankee fan too. But so I can appreciate that.
Well, I'm a weird hybrid because I never jumped ship on the Jets. Typically, if you're from Queens, you're a Mets Jets guy, and everybody else is a Yankees Giants guy. So, which actually worked out for me moving down here to South Jersey because the Phillies don't really play the Yankees that much unless we meet in the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
And I know every 3 years they'll do the division thing.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody really cares about regular season games. You know what I mean? And everybody feels sorry for the Jets. Even the Eagles fans feel sorry for
them. My son is a quasi-Jets fan. He's like, and I was like, you know, we're Eagles fans. But he says, hey, Dad, I want to root for the Jets too. I said, have at it. Enjoy.
Enjoy.
They only play each other in the preseason.
Yes.
And the Jets are
and we're not probably bad. We're probably not going to get to the Super Bowl.
No.
Yeah, so I don't get much slack for that, but I'm thinking, can you imagine if I was a Giants Mets guy?
Ooh, that would be rough.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never heard of that before, a Giants Mets.
No, it's usually Jets Mets
and
Yankees Giants.
That's
it worked
weird.
Out for me.
Yeah, you did. So how did you end up in the Diocese of Camden?
Well, the way I wound up down here, it's a long story, but I'll make it real short. I started out as a religious priest first. I was a Palatine.
Mm-hmm.
And my first assignment was at Bishop Eustace back in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
But about 2 or 3 years into that, I just felt a strong call, which I shared with Gus Lloyd on his radio show because he asked me the same thing. I felt a strong call towards diocesan life, and I had already begun meeting a lot of people from the diocese, Pete Joyce, Monsignor Joyce, Monsignor McGrath, Joe Capella. Father Joe was a former Palatine who had come over to the diocese, and with a couple talks with Monsignor McGrath and Bishop Galante, I moved over to the diocese.
That's good. Very good. Now, you named a whole bunch of great priests there, so I'm not surprised you weren't they didn't indoctrinate you sooner, actually.
My first assignment as a diocesan was at St. Joe's Woodstown back in 2008, and then I was incarnated maybe two or three years after that.
Yeah.
So back,
and you've been happy ever since?
I love it.
As a South Jersey guy?
I actually love it down here.
Yeah.
Oh, people are great. They don't, flip you the bird in a traffic situation.
Drive-through gloss are a little more often, but I hear you.
That's it's a wonderful place. Great people, great culture, and they've embraced me even with the way I talk.
That's okay. You're like our northern cousin. That's all right. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And you lived in North Jersey before you came from New York, so that's fine, too.
Okay.
You slowly made it. You evolved down to...
Yes. It was the long trek down, the migration down to Camden.
Yeah. How long had you been a Palatine before?
I was a Palatine priest for almost 3 years, but in the in-between, when you're not incarnated but you are released, you're still really a religious. So if I count those years, it'd be about 5, and then 8 years of seminary, so 13 years. Yeah, I still have a great devotion to St. Vincent Pallotti, and that's why I'd mentioned him.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he had a great vision, so.
Where did you do your seminary work?
I went to Catholic University, but I did not live in the theological college there. We had our own seminary house.
Okay.
Beautiful place. It was called Palatine Seminary on Green Hill. Mm-hmm. Historic mansion. That was originally owned by the Riggs family, huge family down there, and then the Diggs. They were all friends with General George Washington.
Wow.
And one of his colonels, one of his attachés, was buried in our yard. And he was exhumed from there and brought to Arlington, and they believe there's still another colonel buried back there.
Really?
There's still another marker. And while I was there, they were thinking about removing that body as well, but the family said, no, let him rest where he is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's just a tiny little marker. And
wow, that's...
When I used to cut the grass, every time I went by there, I would stop and just say a little prayer.
Then go
on my way.
That's very nice.
Yeah, it was a great experience.
See, you only get these kinds of stories on the Talking Catholic podcast. I appreciate that.
I know.
Wait, did you tell Gus Lloyd that story?
No, he didn't.
Yeah, see that?
See that?
Catholic
exclusive, everybody. Yeah, no, I told Gus about, leaving and coming into the diocese, but he didn't know about, the seminary and who was buried back there and all the rest.
Okay.
Wow, that is real. So the marker, the marker said, oh, somebody's here. That's how they
knew. Yeah, it's a tiny little thing. But what happened was, the marker was missing for a long time. They actually had a guy come with the Geiger thing or some kind of machinery that shows, and he said there's something down there, someone down there.
Radioactivity, carbon.
Whatever. I don't know what the tools were. And then there was just a little marker put there, and that was it. And General George Washington, president, he stayed at the house.
Mm-hmm.
He was guest of the Riggs, so there were plenty of times he was at the house. There's a little plaque inside and all the rest, so pretty cool place.
Ah, that's awesome. That's really great.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I think we're going to tie up, but any last thoughts on Catholic Strong and what people should really sort of focus on when they're contemplating it?
I think they need to focus on a couple things. One, it is a sacrifice. We don't want people to reduce their ordinary income. This is what Monsignor Marucci said the other day, because if they reduce their ordinary income, it hurts the parish. If they reduce their house of charity, it's going to hurt the poor, right? Because a lot of that monies and energies goes to the poor, the needy. It's truly a sacrifice over and beyond what we're normally giving to the other things. And just like a good army officer, Bishop expected us to go first, to lead the way, us and the deacons, right? That whole concept, first boots on, last boots off. I explained that to the people. I said, look, everything we ask you to do, me and Father Alfred and Deacon Jerry and Deacon Joe, we've already done.
Yeah.
Because we want to lead by example. We don't want to just tell people to give. So we're hoping that they follow that. And again, it really is for a building up of the church. Again, to build new roofs, I get it. New walls, whatever's needed. Those are givens. But more importantly, to build up the people structure, not just the infrastructure, but the people, right? The people who are in the pews and the people who are sitting at home, right? We really need to focus on that. And these monies and resources will go to help all of those things. And we'll see some of the fruits of it soon, right? We already have two projects planned this July. Now, some of those projects may not happen until all the monies are received. So there is a long-term plan here. And we're hoping that that long-term plan extends even beyond the 5 years, because the monies that are collected, even 10 years from now, 15 years from now, are going to continue to support some of the ministries, especially the evangelization and the youth. The youth is a huge concern to us. If you looked at some of the Gallup polls, you see the numbers going down. It's not the church of the 70s or 80s where these churches were still neighborhood churches where everybody, all the kids walked to it. I mean, when I was in youth group, there were 80 kids there. And I played football and basketball. We went after practice, you know, but for some reason now that's kind of shifted. So we want to also use the energies towards that from what we receive in the capital campaign. So those things the people should really focus on, right? Is bringing people back, whether they're the youth, the people sitting at home, and also for the building up of the infrastructure.
People structure. People structure. I love that
structure.
Word. Yeah.
I just came to me. I don't even know if it's good or what, but
I
just
love
came.
It. People structure sounds amazing.
Your church is not built by bricks.
No, it isn't.
No, it's built person by person.
That's right.
Because you could put bricks anywhere, right? What makes it holy is obviously the presence of Christ, but also the presence of the people. And without that presence, it's just bricks.
That's right.
And a brick doesn't mean anything.
And that really has been, even though we know there's been, there will be infrastructure elements to the campaigns, particularly, not specifically at the local level. At no point in any of our communications about this campaign have we talked about that, because all of it has to do with the community, the people, bringing them in, going out and meeting them, whatever it takes to be good missionary disciples in all of our parishes. That's what our goal is. And it'd be nice if there's some nice buildings as well.
So I want to say one other thing. You guys are doing a fantastic job.
Thank you.
What you guys are doing is so good for the church. I mean, this is what people are doing now. It's podcasts, things that are on social media, and all the places that you go to and interview people. I've been listening to them.
Oh, thank you.
And they're done wonderful. So, keep up the great work. And it's part of the evangelization.
That's what we say. That's
exactly right. It's part of what you're doing, and it's much appreciated. Know that you're in my prayers.
Thank you, Father.
For much success. Because it's things like this that keep the people coming motivated, and the one or two people who start to listen, they'll be like, oh, something interesting's going on there. Sometimes we don't see the fruits of our labor until much later.
Yeah.
So don't get discouraged.
Oh, ever, thank you, Father. Right? That's very kind of you. Sir.
God bless you.
That is wonderful. I think I'm going to replay that every day, that last part. That's great. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you for joining us. And Pete, thanks for setting this up. And thanks for bringing us down to your lovely location. We appreciate that. Give us a reason to be here.
Well, you got out of the office for a little bit.
Hey, listen, I don't complain about that. I'll tell you that.
Okay. No.
Thank you guys so much. God bless you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.